Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure, startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
It was the same dream I've been having for years. The rain pelting off the top of my Honda. The darkness around my headlights as black as ink. The ZZ Top song still playing from the speakers. The mansion on the hill still occupied with a single lit window. I was too terrified to comprehend what had happened, what was around me. Normally, that would be the part where I slung open the door and got out. But this particular dream ended as soon as I engaged the door handle. I found myself waking up with a headache, similar to a dull throb that trailed a night of drinking. Only, I hadn't had a drop in years. It wasn't my sight that first alerted me to the foreign atmosphere. My skin felt fuzzy. It tickled even. I lay prone on the thick, beige carpet of a room. The walls were painted lilac and were bare. This was not my room. Through my headache fog, I spotted a door and tried to get up. Once on my haunches, I took in the rest. Above was a simple ceiling fan. On one wall was a window with thick blackout curtains closed shut. In a far corner stood a massive stuffed animal in an orange jumpsuit. Next to that was a tall dresser. Closer to me was a nightstand with an unopened bottle of bourbon on top. Opposite the nightstand was a twin-sized bed adorned with a thick comforter and a mound of colourful throw pillows. I couldn't remember where I was or how I'd gotten there. Nothing was familiar. I used the wall for stability and rose to my feet when the mound of pillows started to move. Out from the comforter slipped a man. He rolled off the bed and into the floor, moaning and clutching his salt and pepper hair. His headache must have been worse than mine. I retreated to the door. The knob refused to twist, so I pulled the door with all my might. The door didn't budge. During my efforts, the man had found his composure and grew startled upon the sight of me. "What the hell is this?" he said as he sat on the bed. "Who the hell are you?" "Look, man, I just want to leave. The door won't open." "Why did you bring me here? Who the hell?" "I didn't bring you here," I shouted. "I woke up in here, just like you." The man clutched his head again. "Is this some kind of joke?" "It's not very funny if it is. Do you know what's going on?" He gave me a baleful look. "What's your name?"
"Chris. You?"
"All right, Chris," he said, then spat on the carpet. "Let's say I believe you're as confused as I am. How long have you been awake?"
"Not long. I'm telling the truth. I don't know what's going on."
The man looked away and looked in the room as I had. Only, his expression was more emotional, giving away his misgivings about the place. His head pivoted from side to side, his breathing sped up, eyes swelling with tears. The man was rugged, muscles under tanned skin, a pack-a-day smoker voice. It's strange that a man this burly would get flustered so easily. "The door's locked, but maybe we can get out through the window." He cut his eyes to me, wiping his wet cheeks.
"Who the hell are you?"
"I told you, my name is Chris."
"No, I mean, who are you? How do you know me?"
"I've never seen you before, man. Honest." The man rose from the bed and approached me. His eyes were pale, and a thin scar went from his chin to his throat. It was only after he turned away to fidget with the doorknob did I see how large the man really was. The stranger could easily overpower me. My confusion of the situation had turned into fear.
"Damn," he said after no luck with the door.
He went to the window and drew open the thick curtains.
"What the hell?"
Daylight had been replaced with pitted concrete.
There wasn't even glass for a window. The man and I stared at the grey rectangle for a while, dumbfounded. Whoever put us in the room wanted us to stay there. After some deliberation, we tried three attempts at freedom. First, we took turns slamming our shoulders and feet into the door to no avail. Next, the man tapped around for studs in the walls, but when nothing sounded promising, he tried to punch through. However, the walls were solid wood, so his knuckles started to bleed. The last attempt unsettled me the most, as it displayed my roommate's sheer strength. He lifted me above his head while I punched the ceiling for weak spots. In the end, we were still trapped, both of us mending bloody knuckles. We decided to ponder some more. "Know anything about that teddy bear?" I asked. "Looks like it did a stint in prison," the man said with a chuckle. "How so?" "That orange jumpsuit, prison attire." "None of this makes sense. We need some time to think."
"Seems we have all the time in the world, buddy."
I paced around the room and leafed through possible reasons for our capture, ricocheting ideas off one another to think of a solution to the problem. I didn't know the man. The room was unfamiliar to me. Whoever put me in here did so with cruel intent. After a few minutes, the man sat on the bed and I slumped down by the front door. When I did, I heard a crinkle. "Check your pockets," I said, and fished out a scrap of paper from my own. He did the same and found the same. Both scraps in a verbiage of font style. I read it aloud. "It cuts the air, gives more comfort than shade, and it does all of this with a spin of a blade."
"A riddle?" the man asked incredulously. "So, this is a bloody joke."
I mulled it over in my mind before figuring it out. The man must have done the same, because we looked up at the same time. He stood on the bed, his boots lost in the thick rolls of fabric, and tried to rip the ceiling fan from its brackets. Like the door, it didn't budge. "Try the blades," I said. He wiped his hand along the top of each blade. Dust fell like snow with each wipe, but on the last blade, a scrap of paper fell. I fetched it and read it aloud. "A bottle of brown may turn the night red. Two drunks under watch, but only one fled." The man spoke to me, but I wasn't paying him attention. Could the riddle mean what I thought? I looked at the scrap of paper, tracing the words with my eyes and memory, reciting the riddle in my head, before stuffing it in the pocket with my other. "What?" I asked. "Sorry, I didn't hear you." I said, "The answer to that riddle is simple too." The bottle of bourbon had already been lifted from the nightstand and was being uncorked with ease. He tipped the bottle back and pursed his lips. "Wait," I shouted.
"What?"
"It could be, I don't know, poison or something." He smelt it, shrugged.
"It's all poison."
He took a long pull and his face puckered when the bottle was lifted from his mouth. He preferred it to me, but I shook my head. "I don't drink."
"You don't drink?"
"Sober for years."
"Ah," he said with a laugh. "A married man?"
"No, I'm not married. Sobriety is a personal choice. I got carried away for a while, so I stopped." He took another long pull and set the bottle back on the nightstand.
"Boozing is a personal choice for me too, Chris. Well, it was. Before..." "Never mind. What the hell are we going to do now?"
I stepped around the bed and picked up the bottle. I was investigating for anything noteworthy on the Wild Turkey label when the man introduced himself.
"I'm Anson, by the way. Sorry if I was being such a hard ass earlier."
I rotated the bottle under the ceiling fan light.
"Understandable, given the situation, man." "You seem like an okay guy, Chris, so I'll shoot it to you straight. I haven't been completely honest with you."
For a second, I thought about how hard it would be to use the bourbon bottle as a weapon if necessary.
"Oh, really? How so?"
When I woke up, I couldn't believe it. He looked over the room again. It's not exactly the same, but it's close. I don't understand, I said, going back to my investigation of the label. Whoever the hell put us in here must have some kind of vendetta against me. You see, this room looks eerily similar to my daughter's room. Your daughter's room? Why would someone do that? I asked, then found a phrase on the label that had been circled with a red pen. Good damn question. I don't know why someone would drag my daughter into this. She's been dead for 3 years. I'm sorry to hear that. That's awful. He stared at his feet. If there's a singular moment in my life that changed everything, it would have been that. The late night call from the deputy, the coroner's office, my wife, well, ex-wife now, wailing when they drew back the sheet. Time doesn't heal all wounds, you know. I understand that more than you know. He looked up and I met his eyes. Nice to meet you, Anson, by the way. So, here is some good news. I found something circled on the bottle. Here. Anson turned the bottle over. It's the Wild Turkey slogan, crafted with conviction. Mean anything to you? Doesn't mean anything to me. His gaze stuck to the corner of the room. He pointed. You think? Conviction? Like a convict? I dashed to the teddy bear, donning the orange prisoner jumpsuit. Obviously, I captured a sense of humour. I picked the fluffy toy up by the head and inspected the front, back, and under the paws. Nothing. Shake it, Anson said. It did nothing. Give it here. I tossed Anson the bear. He held it up close to his chest, then, with a plush arm in each hand, ripped the bear in half. Polyester stuffing erupted out and littered the bedspread. Anson sifted through the white fluff before he lifted a scrap of paper from the largest wad. He unrolled it and read it aloud. My effects it holds, your effects it conceals. Open the drawer to see what it reveals. The dresser, I shouted, and ran to the large piece of furniture. I rolled back the top drawer, empty. The second, empty. Each one I opened was bare. Just a few pieces of wood nailed together to form shallow shafts of antlerless drawers. By that time, Anson was hunched over my shoulder, eagerly anticipating some clue for our inevitable predicament. His reply for each empty slot was a curse word. Then, I pulled the bottom one. When I glided open the bottom drawer, I saw something inside, but Anson's head disappeared from my peripheral. I turned to find him on his knees, digging into the shallow storage area before lifting a pleated orange and blue cloth. He brought the cloth up and sank into his face. He began to sob. What is it, Anson? His large hand unfolded the cloth and he stretched it out. It was a cheerleader uniform. I could hear him sniffing behind the name of the local high school. My daughter, he managed to get out. It's my daughter's uniform. How? I mean, how the hell did this get here? My head began to pound. Was this really happening? I wanted to run, to escape this potential danger. Even though this stranger was knelt under me, I could see that his wide shoulders housed muscles from decades at the gym. He was getting frantic, paranoid. Had he been lying to me? Were things becoming clear to Anson? Was the puzzle coming together for him, yet he refused to educate me on his clarity? Did he know something that I didn't? I thought you said your daughter died. She did. It was after a football game. She was on the cheerleading squad, you see. After the game, she and her boyfriend drove to one of the local spots to have a bonfire with some friends. On the way, they had a big fight, and she demanded to be let out of the car. The boyfriend, a piece of crap, got all mad and left her on the side of the road. That asshole. Anson twisted the uniform so hard it squeaked. By the time he turned back, he found her dead on the side of the road. I had to steady myself with the top of the dresser. My God, that's terrible. Police weren't any help. Personally, I think their boyfriend did it. Maybe it was an accident, maybe it wasn't. He was a piece of crap, his whole family too. Lawyered up real fast. Amanda had a ton of boyfriends, but he was the worst. There was a spark from him. Something in his expression changed, and he looked up at me. Anson extended a finger. How the hell do you fit into all this, huh? Who are you? Anson, calm down. I told you, I'm Chris. I know you're Chris. All this stuff we keep finding about Amanda. Why? I didn't realize I was withdrawing until my back was prodded by the doorknob. I don't know. Honest, I've never met Amanda. He crumpled to the floor, the cheerleader uniform clutched to his chest. He wailed like a pained father. A father that had potential memories of graduations, a wedding announcement, and grandchildren stolen from him. A father who would never get to hug his daughter again. He leaned his head on one of the jutting drawers, which caused the tall dresser to sway, unbalanced. I wanted to touch his shoulder, to tell him everything would work out, that we would get out of here. But I was too anxious, too expectant of him to lash out. Instead, I chose to comfort him in a more utilitarian way. Anson, you need to keep going. Don't give up. We need to find the next riddle. The tension in his arms loosened. The sobs grew lighter. He was working. You seem like a great father, Anson. I mean it. And Amanda would want you to keep fighting, right? He blotted his eyes with the uniform and hugged it as if it was filled out by his daughter. He opened the skirt portion and inspected the inside of the uniform. Under the neckline, he snatched something, then brandished a strip of paper. He used a thick forearm to wipe away some tears, then read our next clue aloud. Gather them for beauty, or plant a weary head, or perhaps they'll be a weapon for a fight instead. Anson rose to his feet and draped one curtain over his wrist. Beauty or weary head. Curtains can be pretty and can be used to darken a room. Agree? Maybe, I said, searching around the room. What about the bed? He let go of the curtain and we ripped the comforter from the mattress. The throw pillows scattering on the carpet like dandelion seeds in the wind. We peeled off the remaining sheets and bundled them in the corner. Flipping the mattress was easy. Anson practically did it by himself. While he was using brute strength to rip a hole in the mattress fabric, I was corralling the box spring near the door. I too needed some room to start deconstructing. By the time we had finished, it looked as if an avalanche of cotton had spontaneously fallen from the ceiling. Banks of fluff piled against walls, broken pieces of wood and wire from the box spring littered the carpet. Strips of soft fabric were draped over wads of foam. Anson and I were exhausted, more so by the fact that our search ended without success. I crawled to my usual spot by the door, while Anson clicked to the garish throw pillows and relaxed on them. He reached the nightstand and grabbed the bourbon. After a quick drink, he gave a little laugh. Chris, I'm tired as hell. Me too. My fingers are on fire and my arms feel like taffy. He grunted, and his eyes went blank. I swear to God, when I find out who did this, I'm gonna kill him. He looked at me when he said that. I was unsure if it was an accusatory glare or just a natural conversational eye contact. Either way, I knew by his tone he was serious. A rabid dog trapped in a corner would bite anyone, even an innocent owner. I concentrated my efforts to curtail his hostility. What time do you think it is? I asked. Another quick drink. No idea. I have no idea either. But I do know we need to find the next riddle soon. There's no food in here. No water. I'm getting thirsty. Here, he offered me the bottle. Wet your whistle. I'm good. Thanks, though. I can barely stay awake as it is. Maybe a nap is in order. Anson took a long pull of the whiskey and returned it to the nightstand. He wiggled on his bed of pillows before finding the most comfortable spot. A nap would be excellent. Maybe some rest will clear out our heads and help us figure out this last riddle. Beauty or weary head my ass. I'll just rest my weary head on these damn pillows. In a lightning strike of inspiration, we traded glances like we both struck oil at the same time. Anson rolled off the throw pillows, and I trudged over the foam and splinters to his makeshift bed. We used the broken timber to puncture the pillows one by one before ripping them into obscurity. I found the next scrap of paper hidden inside one of the red pillows. I read it aloud. Thick like grass, though it's not mowed. Worn like asphalt, though it's not road. Muffled screams and whispers, it does do. Litter and hair and dirt, it does accrue. I read it several times in a row, hoping the reiteration would bring more clarity. When I brought the paper down, I saw Anson was equally as perplexed. Perhaps it was the confusion, but without a word, we went back to our resting spots. His pillow bed was much more lumpy than before, but judging by the rate at which he drank from the bottle, he didn't mind. I was against the door, thinking about the riddle, about what was left in the room. Anson spoke first. This riddle is longer, harder too. I agree. Thick like grass, though it's not mowed. Grass, like marijuana. You don't mow that. Maybe like syrup or something. Syrup is thick. He scratched his salt and pepper hair. Worn like asphalt, but not a road. A sidewalk, a dirt trail. Litter and hair and dirt. That line is strange. A hairbrush accrues those things, right? What's that part about screams? He asked. I unrolled the paper again. Muffle screams and whispers, it does do. These riddles suck, he said, then took another sip. The poet is no Robert Frost, that's for sure. Worn like asphalt, though it's not a road. What the hell does that mean? Anson got to his feet and took in a mouthful of whiskey. He stumbled a bit and used the nightstand for balance. Look, there isn't much in this room. I say we break everything in here. We're bound to find something after we do that. I agreed. I was ready to leave that room, part ways from that emotional and now drunk man who was distraught from the dredged up memories of his daughter. Anson went to the dresser and began breaking off pieces while I focused on the nightstand. The stand was simple. I removed the drawer. Empty. I searched the underside, but there was no strip of paper, no additional clue, nothing that got us one step closer to liberty. I inverted the stand so the legs pointed up and plunged my heel into the center. The wood snapped, and I meticulously scoured the debris for a strip of paper or cloth. Anything with words. It was then that I realized the bottle of whiskey was gone. I checked in the mound of foam behind me, thinking it must have toppled when I upturned the stand. But to my surprise, I found the bottle, nearly empty, next to Anson, who was ripping up the carpet. The remains of the dresser were beside him. His strength and drunkenness had aided his ability to turn the dresser into matchsticks before I could undo a simple wooden nightstand. Anson gripped the edge of the carpet, pulling it with all his might. There were faint ripping noises in quick succession, and the carpet rose an inch. He re-gripped and continued to pull. "Help me, damn it," he demanded. "What are you doing?" "Carpet. The answer to the riddle might be carpet." I chuckled. "You might be right, man." "And I found this. Listen." He tapped his heel on the spot in the carpet that was directly beneath where the dresser had stood. Every tap of his boot created a rumbling, crinkling noise. "Something's gotta be down there, under the carpet. Help me." I clutched another section of carpet and helped him, between his breaks to finish off the bottle, of course. We peeled the carpet back, inch by inch, until we had enough to get a proper grip. A few more pulls, and a quarter of the room was carpetless. I heaved it one more time for good measure, but Anson spotted something and jumped over the coil of rolled carpet. "What is it? You found something?" I asked as he bent down on the solid concrete foundation. There was a pile of papers on the floor. Clues, more riddles. Some sheets were wrinkled from Anson's boot earlier. From my angle, I couldn't tell what they said, so I sauntered up next to my roommate. His hands were rapidly going from page to page, his movements angry and frantic. My next step gave me an angle to see over his shoulder. It wasn't more riddles. It was piles of photographs. "What?" Anson whispered to himself. "What is this? What the hell? What?" I managed to pick one up. "Let me see if I can..." He was on me before I could say anything. I didn't get a good look at the photograph, but I didn't need a good look. I knew what they showed. One of Anton's large palms tightened around my collar, and he slammed me into the wall beside the sunless window. In his other hand were photographs. He waved them around, slapping my forehead with them. Tunnel vision ensued and trapped me in the past. Suddenly, all the clues made sense. 3 years ago, I was driving my Honda Accord down a secluded highway, lined with affluent homes across a bluff. It was late, and I was beyond drunk, a habit that had landed me 2 DUIs and a broken marriage. That night, I swerved and rolled into the shoulder more times than I could count, doing my best to follow the dotted line. There were no street lamps, so the darkness outside my headlights was as black as ink. I fished for my phone and turned on a ZZ Top song. When it started to rain, the sober person would have slowed down. But in my state, with my faculties muted with alcohol and my adrenaline pumping from the music, I sped up. I didn't see her until it was too late. I slammed on my brakes afterwards. I was too terrified to comprehend what had happened, what was around me. The song still hollering from the speakers, the rain still pelting the top of my Honda. But I felt stuck. After gaining my composure, I slung open the door and ran down the asphalt through the pools of water, using my phone light to search. When I found her, it felt like a dream. She was beautiful and young. She was in a cheerleader uniform. There was rain-diluted blood all around. I was drunk, very drunk, but I knew what I did. The Wild Turkey bottle in my car had spilled all over my seat, so I grabbed the bottle and tossed it down the ravine. The rain was hammering so hard, I didn't hear the glass shatter. Then I left her. I hopped in my sedan and took off back the way I came, winding down the road to escape what I had just done. I deserve to be in prison, I kept telling my drunk self. I deserve to die for what I did. Before I rounded the corner, I saw at the top of the cliff one solitary window lit in a mansion above. It sat prominently on the bluff like a lighthouse. That mansion, that window. I always wondered if they witnessed what I did. And now, seeing that photo, that particular angle, I now know they not only witnessed it, but took detailed photos of the accident, clearly showing my car, the young, lifeless cheerleader, and my face. A face that Anson immediately recognized. I wanted to apologize, to tell Anson I'm sorry for killing his daughter. It was an accident. I wanted to ask him for forgiveness. None of this was possible because of his grip around my throat. Those tears were coming back, swelling in his eyes before spilling over angry red cheeks. My tunnel vision intensified. My weight sank to the floor. I thought it was the end. Finally, my punishment had come. Then, I felt the empty whiskey bottle beside me. My strike was faster than Hansen's drunk reaction. The bottle shattered against his skull, and he fell to the side. I took in 3 deep gulps of air and sprinted to the door. I shouted for help. I shouted to be let out. The only one who answered was Hansen. He took me to the ground, and I fell into the remains of the dresser. Splinters and small nails poked my back as Hansen wailed against my face with his fists. I felt my nose crunch under the force. Warm blood sprayed like a geyser from my brow. I tried shaking him off, punching him in defense, but his sheer strength kept me in place. By then, Hansen was roaring mad, spittle dripping from his scowl. His actions sprang from pure hatred. I groped for something, anything to defend myself. His weight bore heavy on me, and the broke pieces of the dresser started to push deeper into my skin. My face was throbbing, and then my back was on fire. Blood was making it difficult to see. Then, my fingers found a long piece of wood. When Hansen rose up and called his arm back for another blow, I shoved the piece of wood into him. I caught him in the neck, and he slipped off of me. Without thinking, I grabbed one of the bedsheets and twisted it into a rope and then anchored it around Anson's neck. He struggled, his massive hands squeezing at my shoes in pleading attempts for me to release my grip. I didn't. When I was sure, I let go. I sobbed after that, but not for long. The window was still barricaded by concrete. The door didn't budge. I was still trapped. I dug through some of the debris on the ground, the foam, fabric, wood and pillows, searching for anything we may have missed. Nothing. I picked up the photographs and studied them with more detail. They were from a professional camera with a high-grade lens that allowed for optimum zoom. I was clearly visible beside my dented Honda. The rain blurred some of the details, but the main focus was clear. The beautiful young woman, now I know her name was Amanda, was lifeless on the asphalt beside me. I scattered the photos. I was furious, lost. But when I grabbed the photos and tossed them around the room, I saw a metal wire running between the foundation and carpet. On the end of the wire was a large loop. Curious, I took the loop and tugged at it. Nothing happened, so I tugged harder. The door creaked open. Past the door, down a dark hallway, then through a heavy steel door. I was outside in the bright midday sun, the vast ocean to my right and meandering hills to my left. But something looked familiar down below. The road. It was the road of my accident 3 years earlier, the one that killed Amanda. I turned around to find I was standing in the yard of a mansion, the one that had a single lit window the night of the accident. Directly behind it, from where I'd just left, was a modified shipping container. I ran, down the hills, over a stream, through a neighborhood. I knew I had to get far away before I asked for help, before someone would lend me a cell phone to call an Uber or cab. I couldn't go to the police, or else it would expose Amanda's death, along with her father's. Whoever lived in that house, whoever modified that shipping container for some macabre escape room, knew that whoever survived the encounter would never report it to the authorities. And they were correct. I still have the same dream. The rain pelting the top of my Honda. The darkness around my headlights as black as ink. The ZZ Top song still playing from the speakers. The mansion on the hill still occupied with a single lit window. I'm too terrified to comprehend what's happened, what's around me. Only now, in my dream, that yellow window atop the bluff turns into a spotlight and points to me as I sob in the rain. Who controls the spotlight? I will never know.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure, startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.